हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीहाद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 59, Sutra 1425. Sakshat Chobayam Natat. Brahman is both creator and the ingredient of creation, because both truths are directly stated in the scriptures. According to the direct statement in scripture, the Sutrakar reiterates Brahman as both the material and efficient cause. Sri Govindabhasya, Siddhanta. The word cha here means certainly. The Taittiriya Brahmana, 4896, explains, what was the forest and what was the tree from which he made heaven and earth? O wise men, ask with your mind, what person supporting the worlds ruled over it? The forest and tree from which he made heaven and earth were Brahman. O wise men, I say to you with my mind that Brahman, supporting the worlds, ruled over it. The Lord is the efficient material cause because of the above statement, which directly indicates the Lord as both causes. From the tree, which arises from the material cause, Prakriti, the Lord made heaven and earth, representing the universe. What is the tree and what is the forest, its support? Where did he stand when he created the world? In other words, in these worldly questions, Brahman is the material cause, forest and tree effects, and the efficient cause, the ruler. This is possible because Brahman is non-worldly, right? That's the point. Well, it says, how can he do both, right? Because in this world, you can't do both, but that's the whole point. He's not from this world. That's why he can do both, right? Because considerations of logic will be that this is not, doesn't make sense because you can't do that. But that's the whole point, is the Lord is beyond the material. So in the material, yes, you can't do that. But in this, but for the Lord, you can.
Okay. Question is regarding this particular scripture, because it's quoting Taittiriya Brahman, and usually we have heard about Taittiriya Upanishad. Now this is Brahman. Sometimes Aranyak also comes up.
So okay, like, yes, yes.
Like we have the same name for different...
Means it's just, it'll be the Brahmana for the, you know, the, yeah, it'll be all connected together. It's one group of the knowledge of that. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. Means the whatever the knowledge was in the Taittiriya Upanishad, then there must have been the same knowledge was given in the Brahmana and the Aranyaka. Because you have the Samhita, right? So that would be based on the, I think, Krishna Yajurveda. Right? So then that's the Upanishad for that recession of the Veda.
Mm-hmm.
So in that discussions, then it must have been there was the Taittiriya Upanishad discussed, the Taittiriya Brahmana and the Taittiriya Aranyaka. Yeah, so that was all there. That knowledge was given to somebody, I forget what happened, but somehow or another it wasn't appreciated or all that or something, and so they gave up that knowledge. And then giving that up, then these Taittiriya birds, they came and ate it. And then them eating it, then they started speaking all this stuff. And so what they spoke, that's known as Taittiriya Upanishad and like that. Like that, so.
Yajnavalkya. He got it from his guru, forgot his name. But he had to give up because his guru is not pleased with him. Then again he goes to Surya and learns...
The same thing.
The same thing. Then that's why it is there are two Yajurvedas.
Oh, that's Shukla. Why the Shukla and Krishna.
I think Krishna came from what he learned from Surya.
Oh, so then that original was Shukla.
Mm.
Okay, so then that's based on Shukla. But in any case, it's a Tarva. I mean, a Yajurveda. Because Taittiriya is the Upanishad for the Yajurveda. Like that. And I think it's Chandogya for Sama. Like that. I'm not sure which one's for Rig. Like that. But they used to have their main Veda. Okay. This is possible because Brahman is non-worldly. Thus, the Lord is both the material and the efficient cause according to this direct statement. Right? So the whole idea is that when the Vedas give these differing statements, when it comes to the Lord, all contradictions are resolved, so it's not a problem. Right? The problem is that if we're trying to deal with it with the material intelligence, material qualities, yeah, then yes, you can't apply that. So that's why then this position can't apply to Pradhan or to the living entity. Because neither of them can be both. Right? But the Lord, not being of this world, he can be both. Right? Because he's the only one in which contradictions are reconciled. Right? So that's the point, is that all these different philosophies, they'll take which side of the statements they prefer. Because both sides are there. So depending upon, they'll take one aspect, but the other aspect that appears to contradict that position, they don't take that. And so they base their philosophy, and it's based on Shastra. So in that way, you could say it's correct, because it has the proper understanding. You know, Guru, Sadhu, Shastra, like this, the sadhana, all these things are there. The only problem is it's not complete. So in other words, what's there is not wrong. But when you try to present something incomplete as complete, that's where the wrong is. Right? Because they can't take it all the way up to the Lord. The parts that they're, like what they're discussing up to Pradhan is correct. But the problem is when they conclude that the Pradhan is the source of everything, or the Jiva, or like this, that's where it goes wrong. So right up to the point where their conclusion is, it's fine. But at the end, it's wrong. So that makes the whole thing wrong. Right? But that doesn't mean that those parts that they're using aren't valuable tools to use. But we have to use them with us, not with them. Yes?
It's on the same principle. I've seen that devotees, they usually, what they don't understand or they don't know, like, for example, study Manu Samhita, Shivaratri, all that stuff. They say that Srila Prabhupada didn't give it. So in this logic, we follow our Acharya. Mm-hmm. So whatever he gave, we do.
Right, so then they should do.
Yeah, so up to that point, and then they always argue over those details.
But the point is if you're taking it on a general, why would you argue over detail? Because, you know what I'm saying? Don't.
That's the fun.
Yeah, that's the point. But the point is that they'll say Prabhupada didn't give, you know, the Manu, but the point is there's a few places where he did, because it wasn't, Manu Samhita is not a generic study. It's a specific study, right? Bhagavatam is generic. Everyone studies that. Gita, Chaitanya, Charitamrita. There's a few other books, Mahabharata, like this. But other than that, then it's specific for your particular service that you would render. So if you're not within management administration, Manu's not for you. Like that. So therefore, he said that, so it's there. But because they don't catch that, or they're not in administration, or that, so therefore then it doesn't apply. So then you know, saying that, oh, it's not there, Prabhupada didn't give it, but he did. Bhagavad Gita, and also in the Bhagavatam, there's two places where he specifically says the leader should study this, right? Like that.
Shivaratri, another one.
Shivaratri is just one of those festivals. It's that Lord Shiva is there, so it's just in respect of him. It'd be kind of like his Vyas Puja kind of program. So it's one of those that Vaishnavas follow it, but if you don't, it doesn't. It's not so important, you know, because there's the main ones that are there. So then for all the Paravasta deities, you know, so for Krishna, Balaram, Nrsingadev, Ramachandra, and Lord Chaitanya. And then there's Lord Chaitanya also mentioned Vamana Dwadasi, Varaha Dwadasi. Right, and of course, then there's Radhastami, and then appearance days of the main acharyas, at least the, you know, the Pancharatrik ones of the first five, you know, from the Guru and back four, so then up to Jagannath Das Babaji, like that. Then, you know, so that's there, that's specific. But the other ones, they're traditional things. So if you haven't been doing, you don't have to worry about it. But if others have been doing, then what's the problem? But they just shouldn't overemphasize it that this has to be done, and if you don't do this, then there's that. Because that's not on that. It's not like that. You know? So that's the difficulty, is that is the Niyamagraha aspect. Someone reduces it, someone increases it, instead of just in its natural position. Like that. You know, it's just, you don't give too much, because as it is, we struggle with just the concept that we fast on the Kadasi, right? So we're putting together, what is it, what are we up to now? We started with Radhika Atra. Huh. And now we're on, what is it, Radhamadava Atra or something else. I think there's at least two or three incarnations. With the idea that we can eat all the things that we would on a Kadasi, right? You know, rather than just it's a day for, you know, not worrying about those things too much. So why then bring in these other things that specifically mean fasting or staying awake? You know, because unless we're, you know, sitting on the veranda arguing with someone else over some political point or something like that, that we can stay up till 10, 11 o'clock, no problem. But if it's actually we're going to be chanting, oh, that's fanatic, you know, like that. Yeah, so seeing that there, then why add in these things? There's no need, because otherwise, Shivaratri, what's the other thing? It's a 9-day...
Navaratri,
then it's, they follow a Kadasi for nine days straight. That's why those communities that do, they know how to cook a Kadasi prashad. Because we only do it once every 2 weeks. We may get it right, may not. It's one day. But there, if it's 9 days straight, you know, you got to get it right. So like Marwaris, like this, their Kadasi prashad is fabulous. Because they do this all the time. You know, So that's...
Maharaj, this is one end. Now the second part is that those who have been doing this particular fasting, you know, from childhood, and now after coming to Krishna consciousness, when they give up, so is it disrespect to Shivji then?
Is it disrespect? It depends why they're giving it up. If it's just that, oh great, we don't have to follow this, then that wouldn't be proper. But if it's just no one follows it, so then they just follow the devotees and don't, then that's fine. You know, it's just like I remember there was this whole bunch of Calcutta... I don't know what you call them, but the Calcutta students, right? You know, who would come out to Mayapur and, you know, at festivals and take part. And remember, they were serving prasad. And they were really serving prasad bad. And these are all boys from good, educated, cultured backgrounds. And they were serving prasad terribly. And then afterwards, I'm talking, sitting down and talking to them about all these different things, what you're supposed to do. And they knew all those things. You know, because I asked him, it says, when your family has a marriage and you're serving prasad, you're going to serve like this, or you're going to serve like how I said? Oh, how you said. It says, why aren't you doing it? Because that's what you do at home, right? Because home's Maya. But we've joined Krishna consciousness, and this is how the brahmacharis and Krishna consciousness serve. So we thought that serving that other way, that was Maya, and serving like this, now this is spiritual. Yeah. Yes. So like that. So they're doing because they think that's what you're supposed to do, so that's fine. But if it's out of laziness, that's not so good. You know, if they're in the temple, temple's not doing why they do. But if they're at home and the family's doing it's a standard thing, then why wouldn't they do? Yeah.
Manas Mate is for everybody. It addresses everybody.
It addresses everybody, but it's applied only by leadership.
I found I was able to apply it.
Sorry?
I found I was able to apply it.
That's there. No, applying means enforcing it. It's known by those who are supposed to know it, you know, who practice it, but it's enforced by those in the leadership position. Right? So in other words, they know it, then they'll teach everybody else. So it's not that everybody needs to study it. Like the other night, then one devotee, senior devotee, was making some comment that he's read Manasamhita. He doesn't understand one word of it. Like that. And he's been saying that for the last, well, since, yeah, last 30 some odd years. Like that. You know, they start freaking out at the losing fingers part, you know, like that. So, and that's the only part they can quote. From 2,000 verses, that's the only part they can remember. So, then he's not supposed to read it. It's not his business. Like that. But you can see his, like, faith in, you know, chanting and studying Srimad Bhagavatam, that was his whole discussion. So then that's fine. But those who are in a position to understand it, they're the ones, they'll teach it. Because that's the point. It's a law book, so it's talking about every law possible that you could run into. So it could be that for an administrator or a leader, that in their whole lifetime they would only meet a few of those rules. They would need to apply. But you have to know them all just in case. And also it gives more of an understanding and balance. Does that make sense? So enforcing it and training in it, then that is done by leadership. So it's not something that's generally studied, because most people won't catch how to use it. But leadership understands it, then they'll teach and enforce it. Then it works very nicely.
But when you gave that seminar on it, you described how to use it.
Yes, but where, okay. did you just go and read it yourself, or did you hear from somebody?
No, I heard from you.
Yes, so then that's what I was meaning. Does that make sense? So once you've heard, you can apply it. But if you just cold went into reading it, then you might not catch. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. That's what we're meaning. But, yes.
Like we were saying that how all the other philosophies, they go up to a certain level and then beyond that, like when they don't go. Similarly, how the current modern knowledge or whatever, is it good that we align it with, like for example, the logical aspect? We align as much as we can with these philosophies so that...
But I mean, when you said for example, you didn't give an example.
Like for example, we have math.
Math, okay. But math is math, it's a hard science.
But there is a logical flow of certain things.
But if you have the Vedic version of how it goes, it'll be much more complete than the modern. Because the modern math, the general math, is meant for people who aren't very interested in math. Right? Well, the Vedic math is for those who are interested in math. So the approach will be slightly different. Because otherwise, then what's the advantage that's there? You know what I'm saying? Because in the modern, the Vedic elements will only be taught, let's say, on the collegiate level. They won't teach it below that. Some schools might, but then they're very unique schools. But otherwise, it's only if someone's a math major as an undergraduate, then they might start learning these things. You know, because for most people, they don't want to deal with numbers at all. And so therefore, one way they function, that's all you're given. But in the Vedic mathematical system, you understand how numbers can be used in so many ways. Does that make sense? Like, I think in the Vedic math thing, there's 15 different ways to do multiplication. Right? People are freaking out with just one. So, does that make sense? So why use the modern when it doesn't have as much completeness?
That's what I mean.
I mean, it's just like, from our own, we'll do. What I'm saying is not that we specifically use these other philosophies. We just use what's traditionally used, like from Gautama. Then the Nyaya is used. Basically, we don't hardly discuss anything from Vaisheshika. Right? Does that make sense? Karma and Mimamsa, a few points we make. So when we talk about the cycle of karma and samsara and how that works and piety, that cycle, that will take, because that's very nicely defined. Like that. Or yoga, then, you know, the aspects of meditation, the mind, the astanga aspects, you know, the key aspects. But the details of application, we use our own. Right? So there's certain key points that they've... Because where will these six philosophies get philosophy when the only philosophy is Vaishnava philosophy, is Vedanta, right? Vaishnava Vedanta is the only philosophy. So they, reading that, make their own philosophy. Right? So those aspects where they leave it in its natural state and they've done a good job at it, we use that. Right? But otherwise, we don't need to use this. It's not like we need to. What I'm saying is that sometimes you'll see that they'll quote from these other groups, and it's just that's explaining why. It's not that we would go out of our way to do that. You know? Does that make sense? So therefore, when we're dealing with these various, you know, arts and sciences in the modern context, if they're able to be applied and nicely, then that's fine. But non-organic method, due to our attachment to it, and so we're forcing a definition on something, you know, Vaishnav, by using this other term that's not, doesn't really work well. Why would we do that other than attachment? You know what I'm saying? There is an aspect that you bring out, but then they'll take that and from one angle you'd look at it one way. You know, just like, let's say we take the angle that, you know, where we're taking the masculine feminine principle. And so since the masculine principle is responding according to the feminine, we could say is then in that way they're controlled by it, right? So Krishna is controlled by it because of the love, right? And so now we apply that, we'll apply the same thing. We don't have the love, we'll have attachment, right? Which is called love, but, you know, it's not prema, right? So then, in that way, the child being the controller in that way of the parent, from that angle it is, but we see is who's organized is the parent, not the child, but it's according to the child's needs. But if we take that aspect of them being the one who's controlling through affection, but we drop the aspect of the affection, just keep the controlling part because of our attachment to control, and, you know, like that, then we start getting into things where now, you know, the child controls everything, and why are you trying to control the child? He's the controller. He wants to do this, and you're saying, no, that's improper. You understand? And this way you get all these different, you know, child, you know, raising and teaching philosophies that have nothing to do with reality. It's just because some intellectual sits there and letting their mind go wild, they come up with this and go, oh, that's it. That's why it's not working. Right? And then they profess it, and then people take it up because they're simple. You know, like I was in London. It's not warm in London, even though they call it summer. It's not warm. Like, this would be a nice summer day. I mean, if you had a day like this in London, you'd call this fabulous. Right? It's cold, right? So there's a baby there, and the baby has no hat on. Right? And up to last year, from the year before, every baby has a hat on. This baby didn't have a hat on. I asked, why baby has no hat? Oh, because, you know, now the new, you know, baby meisters who, you know, give the philosophy of how to raise babies have understood that babies regulate their heat through their head, so if you put a hat on, they can't regulate the heat. Yeah, that's if it's hot, you don't put a hat. You know? It's cold, they need a hat. And so, and then after that, everywhere I went, from there, went down to Australia, babies aren't wearing hats. Because the new philosophy is babies shouldn't wear hats. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
This point is what people argue about completeness. That, for example, Imam Sakaswat, even Mayavadis, they say, you Vaishnavas, you have your own complete philosophy. You have Sambandhavideya Prayojana, but we also have the same system, which is complete in itself.
But that's if you're taking the system, but what is the conclusion of the system? That's the whole point.
So basically, it's all about Prayojana.
Yes, this means how far do you take it? Because until you get to Bhagavan, and Bhagavan in the point of prema, and that interaction of with pastimes, and that's because of his desire, icha, then it won't be complete. Because if you say, okay, they have Brahman, but why is this material world here? They can't explain that. You know, because then there has to be desire. And if Brahman is unchanging, that means there is no personality in mind, so there's, and there's no qualities. So how could you have desire? So then, somehow or another, a portion of Brahman becomes covered by illusion. But you have to cover Brahman by illusion to get a jiva and get the material world. But at the same time, as where does that illusion come from? Oh, it'll come from the jiva. But you just said no, that because of being Brahman covered by illusion, therefore that produces the jiva. And then you say, well, where does the illusion come from? The jiva produces it. So, in other words, they have no idea where this illusion, because they won't accept the personal aspect of Brahman. So they actually can't explain. At this point, that's where the philosophy falls apart. And that's why you have different schools of the impersonal philosophy, is trying to explain this point, which they can't.
They say because it is because of the proximity?
The proximity, but where does the something come to create proximity? Like I'm saying, this rock is next to the paper, but where did the paper or rock come from? You know, and we're not even going to get into scissors, right? Right? Somebody says? Yeah. So that's... Does that make sense? So this is where it's incomplete, because it won't accept more than that. Like, yoga will accept Paramatma, so they're a little bit more complete there, but they still don't accept Bhagavan, because then their point, they merge into the Lord. So it's just another impersonal path. So the aspect of Bhagavan, they don't. Karma Mimamsa, then the Supreme Lord is there. I forget what the name is, Apurva or something, or like that. All he does is just fulfill, you perform the karma, he gives the result. That's all. You don't do the work, he can't give the result, so actually he's dependent upon us. So, you know, that's as far as they get. And that's all they care. As long as I did the work, I get the result, what do I care? I don't need to worship God. So in all these six, even if they have a concept of the Supreme, it's only in support of their karma or jnana. So it's not devotion. Right? So in other words, you have karma, but there's an acceptance of the Supreme. But it's only in support of the karma or morality. You know, just like modern morality, is that, yes, God's there in that, so therefore you should be good and nice. But it's about being good and nice. It's not about serving God. Right? So when you see it's about performing the rules to serve God, then we're talking about something higher. But otherwise, then it's just in support of being good, being moral. And then for impersonalists, then it's about understanding the soul so we can get out of the material world. So then if the Supreme is there, Brahman is there, that's fine, as long as we get out of the material world. So it's not about worshiping God. They may worship, but that's not what it's about. That's why we're looking at, it's not the form that's used. That doesn't mean we don't use the appropriate form, you know, of worship. But the point is that form, we're supposed to worship God with devotion with the appropriate form. But of the two, the devotion is more important than the form. So even if worship's going on and it's not so well done, it's still better than using the form perfectly without the devotion. So you have a devotee who's worshiping the deity but not knowing so much technical, but with devotion. And you have a smarta who follows all the rules and scriptures and mantras and shlokas and all that. Then the devotee's in a better position, even though technically they know less knowledge. But they actually know the complete knowledge. They know the Lord, while the other knows so much technical knowledge, but actually it's not complete. They don't know what it's for. You know, it's like the scholar on the boat. The boat's sinking. He knows so much, but what do you do with it? Does that make sense? That's where the confusion comes, because the secondary is only a means of expression. So then if we accept it, then we take it as main. And if we say, no, it's not main, it's the other, this is not the important part, then we reject it. Those are the two aspects of Niyamagraha. Right? The pro-Vedic and the anti-Vedic. You know? So the pro-Vedic, it's about follow the rules, that makes bhakti. The other one is, no, it's about the primary, and so we don't need it, so we throw it out. So they both miss the point. Yes.
Mara, so you mentioned many, many times that the mood is the most important ingredient in devotion. And we've seen practically some people, somehow or other, they catch mood quickly, relatively quickly. Some people, it takes them longer, but still they able to catch it. And some devotees, they like 20, 25 years, they can't catch the mood. So what's the trick?
It's more about association, because are they associating with those who have that mood for solid periods of time? It's only occasional. Then it won't be as good. You understand? That's the advantage when leadership, at least your top leadership, doesn't have to worry about administration, because then they can just worry about giving association and preaching, seeing to devotional standards. And then those who are dealing with administration and management, they'll do that and get advantage by this association. But if the top leadership is thinking that administration and management will make everything wonderful, then the problem is who's dealing with the devotional association? Because you have to be able to discriminate. So we're trying to get people to discriminate in management. Why not in the spiritual? Right? Like that. Or at least for us, the devotional. Because even the spiritual is still karma. When we say we're not the body, we're the soul, that's technically still material. Because it's gyan. It's only when I'm not the body, I'm the soul, I'm servant of Krishna, now it becomes devotional. But if we only stop there, you know, like the thing is, we're not the body, so I can do any service. That's actually a branch of gyan. So we see as we're using the spiritual or God consciousness for the support of I can do anything. Because it's not even about the gyan, I'm not the body. It's that I can do whatever I want with my body. So it's actually karma, but we're covering that with basically spiritual aspects that aren't actually, you know, in our definition, fully spiritual, because they're not devotional. And we'll claim that it's devotional. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's why we have to be very careful of the modern context, because they use logic that is attractive to the mind and emotions, the sentiment, and that's all. And if you try to deal with it logically, they'll just attack you with other sentiment. Because if you're trying to question it, then it's just like, let's say here, that equal opportunity. Then you're questioning it. Oh, so you don't believe in equal opportunity? And then they'll have some nice, you know, derogatory term that they'll use to try to label you with. Oh, so you're just a dictator and tell everyone, don't give freedom to anyone. So, you know, and then they'll give some extreme example, you know, turn everyone into zombie. You know, like this. So they won't discuss the point, because their acceptance of the point's not based on intelligence, it's based on the mind. So that's all they have to work with. And so they'll just, you're dealing with intelligence, but that won't be discriminated, because that requires intelligence. And so then it's just that it'll be seen on the mental platform. So then they'll just fight with the mind. They won't use the intelligence. That's the method. It's an actual method. Whether people understand it or not is another thing, but that's what they're doing. Does that make sense? Because anytime you bring it up, you're questioning, oh, this ideal, so you don't believe in this ideal. But then the problem is in the modern people, that ideal is higher than being self-centered. So in one sense, it's better than the self-centered guy. Right? Even if he's illogical and this and that, it's about himself. So it's a better position. But when you're talking about devotional, then it's not better in any way, shape, or form. because they're taking the good qualities that you would use in devotional service and use them for the material purpose. Right? So even though they won't get to a higher position than that self-centered person, they'll do it through a more ideal, philosophy, you know, or an idealistic philosophy. So if there is that touch of something higher. But the problem is in the modern kind of context, you can't take it higher. You can't do anything with it because they're just as attached to that for their sense gratification as the guy who doesn't bother with that in his sense gratification. You know, it's like trying to take a bone away from a dog or something. It's not going to work. You know, does that make sense? You know, you can't preach to the dog that it's a bone, there's nothing there. You know, you know, for all the work you're putting in, how much taste do you get? And this, they're not going to buy it. You know, they're a dog. Right? So that's the whole thing, and they bite. Right? It's not that they discuss back philosophy, they just bite. So it's like that. You go in, you touch on this point. They won't look at the logic. They'll look at you're attacking their basis of their philosophy, and then they'll bite. It's just the way it works. It's just, you can't have logical discussions because logical discussions are for people who want to know, right? For people who already think they know. Someone can be very confident in what they know because they've analyzed and it's the best they've seen, so they're confident. You know, like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya or Prakashananda Saraswati. They were very confident in what they knew, but they were actually looking for the absolute truth. So when they're presented with higher logic and higher, you know, points, they will take it. But for others, it's just an identity so that they can feel good. And then if you attack that whole identity of themselves goes, so who are they? So then they lose their confidence, lose their position. So therefore, that's why, you know, they deal like the mouse in the corner. Even though they're a mouse, they fight pretty hard. You know, they're dangerous. So that's why we don't prefer to use modern paradigms and things like that. We don't mind taking an explanation, using something as an example, but not, you know, just that part of what we're saying that works. But we wouldn't use it as a basis because it doesn't have a logic. It doesn't have a science, really. You know, does that make sense? There may be some up to a point, but then after that, there isn't any. So it can't get beyond. The modern things aren't getting, they don't go beyond pranamoy. So why would you deal with it? And even if they do accept higher than that, is it really what their position? They accept the supreme, but what's it about? Just being a nice person. You know? I saw this one political cartoon. And you see from inside an apartment, this, you know, somebody's rung the door, the ladies open the door, and there's two guys dressed nicely and all that, in suits like that. And they're asking her, have you found Jesus or something? And then she's just standing there, and then over on the side behind the door they can't see is a curtain, you know, the curtains for the window. And standing behind that, you know, you see some sandals sticking out, some robes and all that. And so, you know, like that. So that kind of, they're out looking, where's Jesus?
And another one who said that he's
not. Yeah, Yeah, have you found Jesus? It says, no, but if I find him, I'll let you know. You know, like that. Yeah, I didn't know he was lost. Yeah, just okay. Yeah. Did you check the lost and found? Yes.
Let me say that when we practice bhakti, we develop naturally the service attitude towards the Lord,
right,
and develop all the good qualities. I've also come across, you know, followers of Mayavar in,
right,
Kanchipuram,
right,
wherein they were very respectful, a lot of service attitude and everything. So, like, when they are anti against the Lord, how is it that they develop the same good qualities as the devotees?
How do the Mayavadis develop the same qualities as the devotees in, you know, having a nice service attitude and all that, though they're Mayavadis? Because they're following Shastra. Shastra is only going to recommend what's useful in devotional service. So all branches of sadhana and philosophy, they're based on scripture, is going to be based on what's useful in devotional service. There isn't, because there isn't anything else other than devotional service. Mm-hmm. But what is their purpose? Why do they want to have those good qualities of service attitude? What are they going to do with it ultimately?
It's for their own enjoyment.
Yeah, they're going to drop it and merge into Brahman, right? So therefore, it's just that the path of just dry gyan is more difficult, and the path of using bhakti, naishkarmya bhakti, then is easier. So they generally always recommend that for the common person. But you may see that others, that nowadays that people aren't so scholarly in that, then they prefer to use those things. You know, so it's not there. It's just like in, Guru Vayur. Then they do kirtan, Hare Krishna kirtan, you know, 3-hour elephant procession doing kirtan. And all they're chanting is Hare Krishna the whole time. But their whole point is from that, then they'll merge into Brahman. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is that it's not about worshiping God in bhakti. It's about worshiping God and getting a particular benefit. Does that make sense? That's what we're meaning. It looks like it. The forms look like, because the form is the secondary. But what's the primary? So for us, the primary is Krishna. The secondary forms are what's recommended in scripture, because that's the forms Krishna prefers, so that you interact with him on the primary level. But all pious activities, the secondary forms, are recommended. Because if you're following, like let's say you have a smarta, a practicing smarta, right? Vaishnavs practicing smarta, right? But they're not devotional at all, but they follow all the things of devotion. Now, if you somehow or another convince them of Krishna consciousness, what would he have to change in his life? Nothing, right?
Nothing.
Just the prayojana. But I'm just saying, in their secondary form, they'd have to change nothing. So how easy would Krishna consciousness be for them?
Extremely easy.
Yeah, so for them they'd have no problem with the culture, the practices, everything. So that's why scripture recommends it. Because if they do come across the bona fide guru, because as a Vaishnava they're supposed to accept sadhus and this and that, or even as Brahmins, or, you know, follows the Vedic. Now if in all those Brahmins that come over for dinner one happens to be a Vaishnava and they talk about devotional service and they get impressed by that, then their life becomes perfect. They're so close to Krishna, all they have to do is turn around, Krishna's right there. Right? So that's why it's like that. It's all the same. But the problem is because these activities then situate yourself in goodness, people become attached to the goodness and don't see any need to go on to pure goodness. So it's only when one comes along, here's the philosophy in that, then you see that there's more. Or you see that there's a higher taste, you know, the kirtan and all that, you know, like I think it was Vaishnav Das in the Jiva Dharma. Even though he was a well-situated, you know, impersonalist in Varanasi, you know, well-established, then he saw the chanting gave more taste. So then he wanted to know what's going on here, right? So in anyway, but it means they contact Vaishnavas. That makes the difference. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point of the Vedic literature, Vedic culture, is that you're following the recommendations of scripture, so the whole society goes on nicely materially. And then if you come in contact with Vaishnav, then that brings you then to the transcendental platform, and you don't have to change anything. All you had to do is change the consciousness. Right? Now, if nobody's following the Vedic, then you change the consciousness, the lifestyle you'll live is still going to give you trouble. Right, we're still wondering how come, you know, everything isn't materially fabulous, because we don't follow the rules for material fabulousness. Right, it means you don't get, if you give money, you get money, but we don't give charity. How are we going to get more? Right, you know, on the material platform, you give 10 rupees, you get back 10 rupees. Right, but on the spiritual platform, you give 10 rupees, depending on who you give it to, you'll get back you know, 1,000 rupees, 10,000 rupees, lakhs, or, you know, you can't even say. So that's the whole point, is that you can't, what's the process for material improvement, if that's what we're worried about, you know? And because devotees are worried about it, that's why the Vedic recommendation is there. But the problem is many who worry about it, they won't take the solution. You know, it's like the child's sick, but they won't take the medicine. Because for them, it's not nice. Right? Because the idea is, I'm doing things to enjoy. By following the Vedic, then I have to control what I do, therefore I can't be enjoying. So how can this be a better system? Because the ultimate thing is I should enjoy. But you can only enjoy as much as you've been austere. You know, it's just like you can only buy things for how much money you have. Right? You can buy 100 rupees worth of goods with 100 rupees. But we're thinking, no, I'll just get it free. Religion means I'll just get it free. You know? I go to church on Sunday and sit there and, you know, try to be nice, you know, for that hour. And that, and then the whole rest of the week, I should just be rolling in money and fortune. Right? Rather than, no, my whole lifestyle should be like that. That's what makes it. Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty, is that we're thinking we'll get something for nothing. So the Vedic system is designed that piety is the natural lifestyle. So all this simultaneously wanting community development at the same time avoiding the Vedic system of varnashram, that's like saying, I want money, but okay, well, hey, we'll give you a job. No, why do I have to have a job? So much difficulty in this and that. Why can't I just sit at home and watch TV and you'll just send me a check? It's kind of like, who does that? Right? So that's the whole point, is that it doesn't match. Prabhupada's given the solution, and people don't want to take it because they see there's austerity, because it means you have to pay. I want something fabulous for nothing. You know? So, yeah, that's the problem. Okay. And the Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:28-40. The blazing fire is different from the flames, from the sparks, and from the smoke, although all are intimately connected because they are born from the same blazing wood. Okay, footnote 24. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains with suitable examples that Paramatma and Jiva are... distinct individuals. Okay. Though the Father can be perceived to be different from the Son and wealth, since they are separately situated, the same does not apply to the Jiva and his body and senses. And how can the Paramatma be understood to be different from the Jiva? Though not situated separately, the Jiva is different from the products of Maya, and Paramatma is different from the Jiva. An example is given. An explanation will be given when accounts for the repetition of the two words yata and ulmukaha. Fire is different from wood, which is burning, just as it is different from wood. It is different from sparks, and just as it is different from sparks, it is different from smoke, its product. The foolish person, however, will think that the wood, spark, smoke, and fire, because of imagining abhimatat, them to be the surup of fire. Similarly, Paramatma is different from the Jiva, or the second yata can stand for yatatvat, correctly, and the second ulmukat can be a combination of ulmuka and the verb at, meaning to eat. It thus means blazing, which modifies the word fire. Thus the verse means, quote, just as blazing fire is correctly different from wood, sparks, and fire, though by imagination they are considered the same. So Paramatma is different from the Jiva. Right, because here we're talking about being differently situated. Yes, you go, okay, the wealth's over there, the son's over here, the father's here. You can see there's a difference, but at the same time they're intimately connected. But then what about Paramatma, who's sitting with the Jiva, you know, within the body? Then how do you tell the difference here? Right? something. So you have to understand that they are the just as all those appear to be the same but are different, even though they're situated in one place. The Lord and the Jiva are different because He's the source of the Jiva, of the material energy. Right? Even though it's in the same place. Yeah? So, okay. The last part of the example is in the second verse. Pradhana is compared to the wood. The Jiva is compared to the spark. Since it has consciousness, some gitat. The body, senses, and antakarana are compared to the smoke. It's all right if they come and look. Zoe needs the gates open. Boys are taking stuff in and out, but they leave the door open because if you close the door, then it'll take that half a second to reopen it, and that's so much trouble, right? Because the other door is closed. Yeah. You noticed. No. Because in the evenings for Mars's class, then the devotees will bring their kids, and the kids go out there, and you don't want to know what they do out there. They light fires, they pick up the rocks. Have you ever noticed that a lot of the big rocks are separated? They go through, pick those out. Not only do they pick them out, they start throwing them around, and they take the little rocks, you know, the smaller than that, pick them out, and then spread them all over the place. So we kind of closed it off. So everyone comes in here, goes out here. Yes. Okay. The body and senses, antakarana, are compared to the smoke. Paramatma is compared to the fire. Paramatma is different from pradhan, the jiva, the body, senses, and antakarana, because he is the witness, drashta. Because he sees everything else, he is different. Though situated together with the other items, he is not contaminated, because he possesses inconceivable powers, Bhagavan, right? Because he's the purifying agent. He's what makes the wood work, and it's doing something. From that is produced the sparks, from that is produced the smoke.
Mm-hmm. Yes. What is antakarana?
Antakarana. Antakarana?
Internal, sometimes it's internal sense, like the mind or the paramatma.
Okay. Yeah, so here it would be the internal, basically the subtle body.
Because it means usually the mind and the intelligence.
Yes, it's the subtle. It means the body, the senses, because all these things go together. The antakarana, that's what controls the senses and the body, right? You have the body, the senses, but it's the mind and the functions of the intelligence that makes them work. So it's the inner cause, right? Okay. He also appears as Brahman. To some persons of certain qualification, he makes an appearance as consciousness alone without qualities, right? So that's Brahman. And then for those who appreciate him in his original form, then he's there as Krishna. Does that make sense? So like that, he is all these things. Just the wood, the pradhan, from that you get the smoke, right? And does that make sense? Yeah, so the sparks, then they have that quality of the fire. But the smoke, it has the quality of the wood. Right? And so from that, that's the form that then the sparks are within. Right? Because you have the smoke, the sparks are flying around in that. So the living entity then has the body based on the pradhan. But all that is governed by the Lord. He sees all of that. He's what holds it all together. Like if there's no fire, then there's no connection there with smoke and sparks and the wood. It's only because there's fire. Then it all is together. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Sutra 1:4:26. Atma krite parinamata. Atma, self, kritehe, because of making. Parinamata, because of transformation. Brahman is both the creator and the ingredient of creation because he transformed himself into the world. Sutra Prakashika. According to the Sutrakar, Brahman possesses three Shaktis. By possessing Parashakti, he is the efficient cause, having a subtle nature. And by possessing the other two Shaktis, Jiva and Prakriti, he is the material cause, having a gross nature. Footnote 25. Srila Prabhupada's purport discusses the viewpoints put forth by Madhva Sampradaya and the Gaudiya Sampradaya on the subject matter of Parashakti. We strictly adhere to the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Right? Because, in other words, these other sampradayas, they'll have a particular view that will take you up to a particular point, as we mentioned, up to Vaikuntha. So we'll stick to our own. Wherever it's just part of what we're doing, then we make a comparison. There's no problem. We'll give reference that, you know, we'll say this, Madhva says, Ramanuja says, like that. But where it comes to the point where they're concluding it, and it will be different than the usage, then we don't use that part.
Why? Because they contradict our conclusion?
Because they won't get you as far as our conclusion will get you.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so then why get involved? And it may be also that they can get distracted, so then that's also there. Madhvacharya, the Acharya of the Tattvavadis, has described this verse in the following way. Vishnu is described as Yajna personified. And Mother Lakshmi is described as spiritual activities and the original form of worship. In fact, they represent spiritual activities and the supersoul of all Yajna. Lord Vishnu is the supersoul even of Lakshmi Devi, but no one can be the supersoul of Lord Vishnu, for Lord Vishnu himself is the spiritual supersoul of everyone. End quote. According to Madhvacharya, there are two tattvas or factors. One is independent and the other is dependent. Right? Because his point is two. So in his philosophy in dealing on the material, with the material qualities that people have that are the mundane, he'll never accept any oneness at all. You know? So it's only when you get what you talk about in Vaikuntha, then you'll see that he'll hint at the aspect of oneness. But other than that, he won't. So that also will make a limitation. One is independent, the other is dependent. The first tattva is the Supreme Lord Vishnu. The second is the Jiva tattva. Lakshmi Devi, being dependent on Lord Vishnu, is sometimes counted amongst the Jivas. Right? But she's internal potency, but this Jivas meaning that they are dependent upon the Lord. That aspect of it. Like just the other one, that the Lord is Atma because he's all-pervading. Right? Not that he as one is all pervading, not that there's a whole bunch of jivas and they're all, so there's so many of them, they're all pervading. Right? The Gaudiya Vaishnavas, however, describe Lakshmi in accordance with the following two verses from the Pramaya Ratnavali of Baladeva Vidibhushan. The first verse is a quotation from the Vishnu Purana. O best of Brahmanas, Lakshmiji is the constant companion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, and therefore she is called Anapayini. She is the mother of all creation. As Lord Vishnu is all-pervading, his spiritual potency, Mother Lakshmi, is also all-pervading. Lord Vishnu has three principal potencies, internal, external, and marginal. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has accepted Parashakti, the spiritual energy of the Lord, as being identical with the Lord. Thus, she is also included in the independent Vishnu Tattva. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing. We'll make the distinction of the three. They'll make the distinction of two. Mm-hmm. We even see amongst the Shris, one group makes two and the other group three. Like that. That's one of the major philosophical differences. Because one group will classify Lakshmi as Jiva. Not as Jiva meaning like the individual, but still in that category.
Yes.
While the others will take her, she's the best devotee, she's who close like this. So there's a slight difference. It's a point that's what we're meaning. If you overemphasize it, you extend it beyond its application. I think that's also the Sanskrit term for that, right, where you extend the example more than what it should be.
Like
Atishayokti.
So we accept three means external, internal, and marginal.
Yes.
And they?
They're just counting. There's Vishnu Tattva, and then there's everything else.
So
that will take. It means the material will be there, but the internal potency and the jiva, that'll be counted in one category. She may be the best of jivas, But they're looking at a jiva meaning dependent on the Lord, not whether they're what their specific nature is different from that.
And how do they refer to Srimati Radharani?
They probably don't. Yeah, but she's the best of devotees, so you're going to worship the Lord through Lakshmi. But it's just she's the best. In other words, they're defining jiva as servant. Right? So jivas are servant, and Parashakti is servant. Right? So they're not distinguishing within servant. You know, or they may distinguish after that, but that's not the important element. Does that make sense? So we won't do that as much, because they're trying to make the difference. Because if you say there's any closeness, then the Mayavadis catch that point, right? Because Ramanujacharya already gave that special oneness, you know, that oneness between the mood of the Lord and the devotee, the devotional, the relationship, and so many hundreds of years later, they still haven't surrendered. So then Madhvacharya then avoids that aspect of oneness and just says there's two. So he will not discuss any kind of oneness. Right? So that means everybody's got to be on the other side. So this point of Lakshmi being non-different from him, being, you know, same, unlimited like him, so she'll be counted on that side. You know? I mean, she's different, but, you know, in other words, they'll categorize one way, but if you put it here, then there's too much oneness, so they'll put on the other side. Yes. You know, because yes. then you get the point across. Yes. Right? Certainly. In the Kantimala commentary on the Pramaya Ratnavali, there's a statement whose explanation is as follows. Although some authoritative Vaishnava disciplic successions count the goddess of fortune among the ever-liberated living entities, jivas in Vaikuntha, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in accordance with the statements in the Vishnu Purana, has described Lakshmi as being identical with the Vishnu Tattva. Mm-hmm. The correct conclusion is that the descriptions of Lakshmi as being different from Vishnu are stated when eternally liberated living entity is imbued with the quality of Lakshmi. They do not pertain to Mother Lakshmi, the eternal consort of Lord Vishnu. Right? So, therefore, then when Madhva is talking about that, he's talking about when the jiva becomes imbued with this potency of Lakshmi, meaning they take up devotion. That's what he's referring to. But he's referring to it in a way that no one can take any impersonal, you know, understanding from it. Does that make sense? That's why he's saying, once you get up to actually the liberated or the devotional, you know, real liberation by service and Vaikuntha, then you see he doesn't press this point. But before that, he does, because he's just seen that people have misapplied it. Does that make sense? But they're not going to make the distinction, because the point is they'll see that they're different and they'll just leave it at that. Right? So it's not discussed further. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that's why the devotee then is taken as representing Lakshmi, right? In that she's the goddess of goddess of devotion. So the devotee represents that by. So then in that case, then is jiva. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that's then what's given as the correct conclusion of how he's explaining it, but he doesn't say it.
Yes.
Yes.
So Maharaj, this philosophy of Ajinta Veda, Veda Tattva, so if the person doesn't have a proper attitude, then he will apply Veda.
That's why we're studying it on such a subtle level, so you can make sure that we are always applying it properly. Because just like if I say we're not the body, you know, we're the soul, so therefore we're not restricted by all these rules and regulations. We chant, we're above the rules. It all sounds like it's devotional. Yes. But it's actually just covered karma. And it's actually technically vikarma, because it's not based on shastra. We're only using shastra and using jnana, and as much as it supports our vikarmic view. Mm-hmm. But it's only by technically looking at it to this subtlety you can tell the difference. Otherwise, it would be just taken as devotional service. Does that make sense? So that's the point. So simple is all right if what you're doing is just simply just pure devotion. Then you just have it simple and don't worry about it. It works. But as we become sophisticated and start to branch out in things other than pure devotion, then unless you have sophisticated philosophy, how do you discern? You know what I'm saying? Sophisticated philosophy is not required as such for one's devotional service. So our studying this is in support of devotional service. So that's why it becomes devotional service, because we're seeing it in connection with Bhagavatam, so that we can please the Lord, so we can actually understand what's pure devotion and practice that. But as far as studying technical points, studying Vedanta Sutra, studying all this logic, that's actually on its own is just gyan. Yeah. Right? So one could say, so we don't need it, but then if the same way is, then we don't need karma, so we don't need the body and anything you do, so you should just sit down in the corner and do nothing. Don't think, don't do anything, and then that will be the perfection of devotion, right? You know, I doubt it's going to happen. That's generally known as Buddhism, but, you know, whatever. You understand? So that's the whole thing, is that these things come up, but they're using philosophies, but they don't even know themselves. They just know it works on people, and then they use it. And when it doesn't work, then they freak out. They don't know what to do. Like that. Yeah. Okay. Okay, Sri Govindabhasya. Siddhanta, so kamayata. Well, he desired, may I become many. Taittiriya Upanishad 2.6. This desire for creation can refer only to Paramatma. Another statement is tadatmanam swayam akuruta. He made himself. Taittiriya Upanishad 2.7. The person who acted as creator is also the object created. This indicates that the Lord is agent and the object acted upon. Right? So why push this so much? Because we can say, but this is just so much yawn. Why do we? We're just interested in Krishna and Vrindavan and this and that. But then the point comes down is that then even you're in Vrindavan. So what are you going to see in Vrindavan? You know, nice cows, nice grass, nice trees and flowers and nice Jamuna and nice so many things. But what has that got to do with Krishna? You understand? So unless you see that connected to Krishna, everything about Krishna, so that this understanding, then it's all Krishna. It's Krishna who's everything. So then one is able to understand the person in everything. Right? Because of affection for Krishna, therefore it's the person. It's the person who's expanded as everything. So everything reminds you of the person. So this technical understanding does not have any problem with devotional service. So we can see is that the technicality that is there is taken even finer than what the other Vaishnava acharyas present. Because they only have to present up to Vaikuntha level.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right? And so then here Achintaveda Veda Tattva goes farther. So it's actually more technical. It's because of Braja Bhakti that we can be more technical. Because we can see the things as same and as different. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Our goal is to experience Krishna consciousness. And for mundane people, it's pretty obvious. Whatever they experience is within mundane sphere. For us, however, it is we study all that knowledge. And when the experience comes, sometimes, rarely, then we start analyzing, oh, this is Anubhava, Nana, Sattvika Bhava is coming, and then we lose the whole experience.
Yes, but that's because of that point of aparoksha. Aparoksha means you experience. But when you're analyzing, then you drop out of aparoksha, so you don't experience anymore.
Right.
So that's why we're saying is that the analytical is to get you to the point of that experience, not to maintain the experience.
So what will it maintain our experience?
Devotion itself. Bhakti is independent. So devotion itself maintains itself. We're using the analytical aspect so that we separate ourselves from the material energy so that our devotion and love for the material energy is seen to be inferior, and it's actually supposed to be devotion and love to Krishna. That will actually give us satisfaction. So, in other words, we're dealing with Krishna, whether we're dealing with him directly or whether we're dealing with him indirectly through the material energy, we're still only dealing with Krishna, and we're dealing with Krishna through his energies. So either it's internal in devotion or external in lust. So the process technically is the same, means in principle. But the difference is where you're going to focus. So the analytical is to we lose our interest in the approaching Krishna through the material energy, and to switching it to dealing with Krishna directly through his internal potency. Right? So the goal is not actually the experience. The goal is the love for Krishna. The experience just comes anyway. Because if we put it on the experience, then the experience may change. Because we see the centuries are always moving. That's the meaning of them. They're temporary. So they're temporary transformations that add to the more major aspect of the anubhavs that are there. That is supporting the sthayibhav, right? So all these things are there. So when we analyze, then that's there. So if that increases your devotion, then that approach of analyzation is nice. You also have the element. It's not necessarily your analyzing made it go away. It's by analyzing you appreciated it. And then Krishna went away. Now what will happen? Will you want to continue that? Yeah, so now you have more reason to. Before you were doing because it's something you're supposed to do. Now you'd be doing because you want to do it. You know, so the example more appropriate would be that aspect of Narad Muni, right, as the maidservant. And then the Lord came to him and spoke to him. Now he'll always be looking for that. Or Parikshit Maharaj, he's always looking. So the analyzation is that if by doing that you define where to look and what process, and that is what gave that experience, and that means that's what you want to follow. So it's not a problem. It just means that, you know, we have to continue. So it's not that we just do something, then we step back, and then it'll continue. But you don't like the elevated seat we made for you. Is that?
Yes. So, Maharaj, so we go on analyzing on the tattva as long as it complements the rest.
Yes, but the point is in all of our activities, you can see, because at some point, any analyzation doesn't go against, but the difference is that when we analyze, we're going through these intellectual processes and eventually get it to Krishna. But on the transcendental platform, that analysis and that conclusion in Krishna is simultaneous. Right? So then, because everything is Krishna, everything reminds you of the person Krishna. We have to go through a state that for us it's the material world. Then we have to analyze, well, now actually it's made out of the energy, and this has come from Brahman, that's one of Krishna's energies, so actually according to this principle, that he is the creator and the created, so therefore it's Krishna, so it's connection to him, and then Krishna has these nice qualities. Does that make sense? Because we don't have the affection. So the intellectual will be there. That's why Vaidhi's there, to that at least we're going through the steps. But then the aspect of rag means it's simultaneous. Because it's about the person, then anything connected with the person, which means the whole creation, reminds us of the person. So depending upon our particular nature, then we'll be noticing different aspects of the creation. There's unlimited aspects, but we'll notice those values we have in connection with Krishna. Right? That's what makes for the different devotional activities and things like that. So in the spiritual world, that's based on your original rasa with Krishna. Here it's based on your particular conditioning. But the point is, it doesn't matter which conditioning you use to remember Krishna, because it's all Krishna anyway. So it doesn't matter. And it by remembering Krishna, it will awaken our original relationship. Is that? Yes, thank you.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premananda ki.